Hey everyone, welcome to Creep Your Heart Out. I'm Monica.
And I'm Nick.
And this is episode 3, everybody. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. And if you've already listened to our previous episodes, thank you and welcome back. It's Mother's Day today. Aww. As we record this. We're recording a little later in the day. We went out with Nick's mom for a little bit of lunch earlier and then came home and took a 3-hour nap.
Yeah.
Naturally. So we just woke up and we were like, oh shit, we still got to record the podcast.
Big shout out to my wonderful mother, Nadine.
And all the mothers out there.
Yep.
Hope you're enjoying the day with your families or without. Whatever floats your boat. I don't think we really have too much news today, but we do have a big, exciting announcement coming in the next couple of weeks. So definitely make sure you keep an eye and an ear out for that. We'll be announcing it both on social media and on the podcast, probably in maybe 2 weeks. We have a couple more details that need to be straightened out before we can announce anything. So just keep your eyes and ears peeled. So before we get started, and purely for fun, I'm going to ask you an important question.
Okay.
Is there anything, like, think back in your childhood, was there ever a time that you did something, like, really bad and you tried to hide it from your parents? Both, like, either if it was, like, embarrassing or you just didn't want to get in trouble?
I'm sure there was something.
You can't think specifically of anything?
Specifically.
That's a tough question. I tried to think of myself for myself, too.
Yeah, when my brother gave me a porno magazine to leave him and his friends alone. That was the exchange. And then he panicked and he was like, and so he's like, dude, we have to destroy the evidence. Because my brother was convinced that it was like a penthouse or something. It was some magazine. And he comes to my room. He's like, Nick, we have to get rid of the magazine. We have to destroy the evidence because if mom finds out, like, I don't know what he thought she was going to do. So it's actually a good story for Mother's Day. But he was convinced she was going to, like, disown us and we were going to be living on the street and she was going to have a heart attack from a broken heart and die. So we went into the woods and we snuck into the woods and we ripped it up, we burned it, and then we buried it in a swamp. And then we said, we will never speak of this ever again.
And here you are announcing on the podcast, yeah, that your mother listens to.
Yeah, I mean, we told my mom about it a few years ago.
How old were you?
Oh, I was probably like 9,
maybe. Yeah, maybe a little too young for a penthouse magazine.
Well, yeah, of course. He got it from like an older kid. So this is before like the internet, obviously.
Yeah.
We didn't have the internet or anything like that in the house. I was like maybe like 9 or something. So my brother would have been like 12. And yeah. I don't know where he got it. He probably got it from like some older kid at school or something. But no, we told my mom about a couple of years. She was laughing her ass off.
Of course she was. But at the time, you're like, oh shit. We got to get rid of this.
I've never been in. I was really too worried, but then my brother starts spinning the story of like what would happen if mom found it. And it was just like,
leave you in the woods.
That guilt like washed over me and that fear. And yeah, so it was like we hit a body basically. Like, it was pretty funny.
Well, yeah, I mean, that kind of has something to do with today's story about hiding something that you shouldn't have. Or hiding something that you did that you shouldn't have done and then trying to hide it away from adults in your life. So this case, before we really get into it, I'm going to tell you guys that huge trigger warning. This case is pretty bad. It involves the death of a child and the abuse of her corpse afterwards. Ew. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But I do want to make a point in saying that I'm not going to, these kinds of cases, especially when they involve kids, they're probably going to be pretty few and far between for us. But I do think they are as important as any of them to talk about because true crime's true crime. And sometimes it's more horrific and disgusting and disturbing than other times. Not that it's ever not gross or disturbing, but sometimes it's a lot worse. So yeah. The case that we're going to be talking about today is the murder of Maddie Clifton. And I'm assuming you've never heard of it.
I never heard
of this one until I think I heard of this one like maybe a year ago. And I mean, I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. I watch a lot of documentaries. I read a lot of stuff. And every once in a while, something really sticks with me. And this was one that really stuck with me. Usually the ones that stick with me too are unsolved ones or like really poorly investigated cases like the West Memphis 3. I still think about that one like every single day because that one disturbed the shit out of me. But this one is pretty disturbing in its own way. So I do think cases like this need a respectful retelling. So yeah, we're just going to jump right into it. So Tuesday, November 3rd, 1998, Madeline Maddie Ray Clifton gets home from school around 4:30 p.m. She and her mother, Sheila, father, Steve, and older sister, Jessie, lived on a cul-de-sac in a small neighborhood in Jacksonville, Florida. Maddie was 8 years old and in the third grade at the time. She had chestnut brown hair, bright brown eyes, freckles, and people described Maddie as a bright little girl who loved to laugh, but was also tough as nails. I feel like that's me, right? I'm tough as nails.
Yeah.
Not really. Yeah, well, sometimes. A neighbor said, quote, when she talked, she made sure you listened. She played basketball, hockey, and football, and she also danced and played the piano. After school that afternoon, she spent some time taking down Halloween decorations and playing the piano before leaving the house to go out and play for a little while before dinner. So Maddie goes over to neighbor Larry Grisham's house to hit golf balls. At one point, she goes home to get more golf balls. She runs into her mother, and she says she'll be home in time for dinner. Around 6:20 p.m., her mother, Sheila Clifton, calls out for Maddie and her older sister, Jessie, who was 11 at the time, to come home for dinner. And when I say this, I, like, distinctly remember, because I used to live on a cul-de-sac when I was little, and I moved when I was 5. And, you know, there was, like, a bunch of neighborhood houses around, and all of them had kids. And I would always be at, like, one or the other. But I remember my mom would always stand on the porch and just go, Monica, and just scream until I came back. And then I'd come, like, I'd be, like, I don't think we ever, like, went in the houses, but we'd always, like, be playing outside. So, like, my mom would always scream for me to come home. Like, and I was little, too. I was, like, 3.
Yeah.
3, 4. Just thinking about stuff like that now is so weird. Like, letting, like, a 3-year-old just out in the neighborhood, like... But it was the 90s, and it was safe at the time, and all the houses had kids, so...
I wouldn't say it was any safer. You just didn't hear about shit.
Yeah, that's true.
Hear and see.
I mean, for any of you, for those of you that don't know, we live in New Hampshire, and I'm pretty sure our crime rate's pretty low. When you want a murder or something weird or someone goes missing around here, you hear about it, and it's maybe once a year in the entire state, you know. Anyway, so she Sheila calls home for her kids to come home, and Jessie returns home almost immediately, but Maddie does not. Jessie tells her mother that she hasn't seen Maddie since earlier and doesn't know where she is now. Sheila goes from house to house, thinking maybe Maddie is playing with another neighborhood child, but no one knows where she is. So Sheila's starting to panic, and now she's asking the neighbors to help find her daughter. Despite all the searching, no one can find the little girl anywhere. At 6:33 p.m., Sheila calls 911 to report her daughter missing. Meanwhile, the neighborhood adults and children alike take up the search for Maddie. Her sister Jessie rides her bike through the neighborhood calling out Maddie's name. People bring out flashlights and continue the frantic search into the night and the early hours of the next morning. After hours and hours of searching, still no one has found Maddie. Wednesday, November 4th, 1998, so the next day, a Jacksonville Sheriff's Office detective goes door to door asking neighbors if they've seen Maddie or know what might have happened to her. No one comes forward saying they've seen or heard anything unusual. Detectives turn their attention to Larry Grisham, who, if you remember, was the neighbor who Maddie was known to be with last when she was at his house hitting golf balls. Grisham tells police that around 5:15 p.m. the previous day, he and Maddie were hitting golf balls in his yard. He says Maddie went home to get more golf balls but never returned. He assumed her parents had just kept her home since it was getting late. Fun fact about Grisham, he's a 45-year-old man who enjoys playing with children.
Red flag.
Yeah, it's pretty fucking gross. Don't do that. You sick fuck. Anyway, he has a criminal history with 29 total arrests, including auto theft, driving under the influence, and 2 counts of sexual battery. And all those charges had been dropped. Or at least the sexual battery charges had been dropped. Yeah, but still gross. Police are pretty sure they found their man. They search Grisham's home 9 times, but recover nothing. He is also questioned 20 separate times. Police were still sure he had something to do with Maddie's disappearance. But Grisham had an alibi and even provided police a DNA sample. And I believe after he provided the DNA sample, he was cleared as a suspect. I'm not really sure why, but Anyway, they continue their search. Among the other neighbors interviewed is 14-year-old Joshua Phillips. Despite being almost double her age, Josh is a good friend of Maddie's, and they often played together. During Josh's interview, police ask if he's seen Maddie that day, and Josh said he'd seen her the day before she disappeared, but he hadn't seen her then.
She was double her age. He was, what, 6?
No, Maddie's 8.
Oh, 8.
And Josh is 14, almost double her age.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I was kind of thinking back to, like, when I was around that age, and I was just, like, obsessed with boys and, like, writing on myself a Sharpie and, like, you know, fucking Slipknot or, like, whatever.
You were
fucking
obsessed
14
with boys when you were 8?
14.
Oh, 14.
No, when I was 8, I was into, like, Pokemon cards. And
Yeah, same.
I kind of still am. Yeah. So I just never really grew out of that. But no, I mean, like, when I was 14, what I'm saying is, like, when I was 14, I didn't have the desire to play with children half my age.
Yeah.
I wanted to hang out with people my age. You
or
know?
Older, yeah.
Or yeah, a little bit older. Like, maybe, like, 13, 14, 15, 16 was around the age of people that I would hang out with. I wouldn't really hang out with anyone older than that. You're still a child, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, so he claims that he hadn't seen her. And he claims that because of their age difference, they are not allowed to play together. Wild, right? Yeah. Police did a search of the Phillips house, shed, and car, but find nothing. For almost a week after Maddie's disappearance, her parents, Steve and Sheila, work with the police to help find their daughter. Over 1,000 volunteers help search the neighborhood, woods, and swamps. Police search homes in the neighborhood with cadaver dogs. They search sheds, garages, empty buildings, and they still cannot find Maddie. The Friday after Maddie's disappearance, the U.S. Army Reserve is called in to search culverts and open manholes. Missing persons flyers are handed out and posted on poles, trees, and businesses. People sport yellow ribbons on their shirts and hang ribbons from trees to keep the city aware of the still missing child. Out of desperation, the family finally turns to the news media to broadcast Maddie's disappearance and offers a $50,000 reward with the possibility of doubling it if she is found. Maddie's face is printed on shirts, billboards, and is now even being shown on television in hopes that someone somewhere has seen her. They are even nervous for Maddie's older sister, Jessie, fearing that if someone had taken Maddie, they might come try to take her sister. So they had a police officer stay with them throughout that week and stay overnight. Tuesday, November 10th, 1998. So a full week after Maddie's disappearance. The Clifton family appears on the set of Good Morning America. Ironically and unfortunately, as they are wrapping up, a woman in their neighborhood makes a grim discovery. So you can only imagine what that is. The woman's name is Melissa Phillips. And she also goes by Missy, but I mostly just call her Melissa in here. She is the neighbor across the street from the Cliftons and also mother of Josh Phillips, the 14-year-old boy who plays with Maddie. Around 7 a.m., she sees Josh off onto the school bus. She has a couple hours before work, so she decides to clean Josh's room. She had been asking him to do it for days, and she said the room smelled strongly of rotting food because teenage boys. Yeah. Josh also has a couple of bird cages in the room that are dirty and could be another source of the smell. She walks into the room and it's a mess and it smells bad. And I have pictures of his room. It's fucking gross. So right away, she notices a wet spot on the floor near Josh's waterbed. And she assumes the waterbed is leaking. Josh had mentioned to her that the bed was leaking weeks before. She thinks part of the smell could be mold or mildew from the leak. She touches the corner of the mattress and it's soaked. She lifts the corner of the mattress and notices a white sock poking out and figures it's one of Josh's. She tries to tug it out, but it won't come loose. Then she notices black electrical tape holding the corner of the wooden bed frame together and thinks Josh must have tried to fix the bed himself. The tape peels off easily and the wood gives way and she can see a little under the bed, but it's dark. She goes and gets a flashlight. And absolutely loses her shit at what she finds.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Can you guess what it is?
Yeah.
So panicking, her first thought is to call her husband at work. When he doesn't answer, he leaves her a message. She leaves him a message to call her back and says it's an emergency. She paces around for a while trying to get her thoughts straight because obviously she's shocked. and she decides not to call 911 since her neighborhood is still full of cops. At 7:30 a.m., Melissa approaches Officer Donald Tootin, who is sitting in his police car on surveillance duty in their neighborhood. He notices her coming in his rearview mirror, and seeing she looks distraught, gets out of the car and walks to meet her, asking if he can help her. She can't really get the words out, so she just asks him to come with her to her house. Two other officers that were in the vicinity accompany Officer Tootin to Melissa's home. I can't talk today. Sorry, it's such a mess. Melissa is too freaked out to go back into her son's room, so she just points and lets the officers take a look. Upon entry, officers knew there was something very wrong in that room. Immediately, the officers are met with the smell of death and decay. They can see right away what Melissa is talking about. They see the bed frame is open and 2 feet with white socks poking out. Maddie Clifton was found under Josh Phillips' waterbed, beaten and stabbed to death, and was naked from the waist down except for her white socks.
Oh.
Yeah.
God damn it.
I know.
The fuck?
It's, I have a really bad headache while we're recording right now. I apologize. I'm stumbling over all my words, but it's making my headache worse thinking about finding that under a bed.
Yeah.
And
that's gnarly.
It's just so crazy and sad and gross all at the same time. It's just, ugh. Yeah. Oh,
jeez.
Yeah. It gets worse. Mm. It gets worse.
How can it get worse?
It gets worse. You'll see. So Officer Tootin leaves the room to speak with Melissa. Melissa tells him the story of how she found the body. She tells Tootin repeatedly that it's Josh's room and that she'd been asking him to clean it for weeks. So she's obviously hysterical. When Tootin asks where Josh is, Melissa tells him he's on the bus to school. Later, Melissa told the officer, quote, "I remember looking at the Clifton's house as I walked towards the patrol car thinking, right now they still have hope. In a few minutes, they'll know."
Oh, yeah. Fucking rugged.
Yeah, I get like chills. Whew, I cannot imagine like knowing that information, knowing that you were about to be the one to tell somebody that.
I always thought about that. Like you have to be, if you're a doctor or like a cop or something, you got to deliver some like news like that. Like,
man. I mean, those people choose to do that professionally though. So they're already a special kind of person. This woman is an average woman. Mm-hmm. That's like me or you finding something that you don't want to find and then having to like go tell somebody about it. Mm-hmm. It's like, ugh, ew. Like, I wouldn't even want to find one of the cats dead and have to tell you about it.
Yeah.
That would be like horrific and awful in itself. And that's a fucking cat. You know what I mean? Not, this is a little girl that lives across the street. So after this interview, police take Melissa down to police headquarters. At around the same moment, Melissa's husband gets her voicemail and rushes home where he is met with police officers. Just after this, detectives arrive at the Clifton's house and deliver the bad news to the parents. Maddie's father Steve's first question was, "Where did you find her?" When the officers tell them they found her across the street, the parents are stunned. Upstairs, Maddie's older sister Jessie is playing Monopoly with another officer. She's summoned downstairs where they explain to her that Maddie is no longer with them. Jessie is absolutely devastated. Her and her younger sister were extremely close. Mm. I know, and she was only 11. It's really sad. And there's some interviews that you can find, too, of Jessie, who she's around our age now. But, yeah, the stories she tells, like, I watched this one interview of her. This was only a couple years ago, I think, might have been a more recent interview. But her talking about, like, riding her bike up and down the street, like, calling her name out. And then, like, awful. When the officers told her that her sister had died. And, like, yeah, it's just so crazy. And she was so young, too, so.
Yeah. Maddie would have been my age because she was 8 years old in 98.
Right. And then, so her sister Jessie would have been, like, your brother's age.
Yeah, so, yeah, Maddie would be, like, 31 now. And
she's probably, like, in her mid-30s.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So Saturday, November 14th, 1998, the funeral takes place at the San Jose Catholic Church in Jacksonville. 1,200 people show up to mourn the little girl and pay their respects to the family. Hundreds more people stand outside in silence. It's absolutely huge. It's like the whole community showed up or whatever, you know, just like one of those things. They exchanged the purple ribbons they'd previously worn and hung around town with purple ones, and people dressed in purple instead of black to mourn her, saying they wanted to represent her vibrant but short life. So now we're going to flash on over to Joshua's room, that fucking pigsty. So in the meantime, Joshua's room is being processed as a crime scene. Investigators find a lot of interesting pieces of evidence. Josh's room is filled with air fresheners. He's got Febreze. He's got Overeater. He's got Febreze. He's got Overeater. Wow.
Oh, my God, dude.
Oh, my God. My head feels like it's about to explode because of this fucking pollen outside, so I cannot talk and I cannot concentrate. I'm sorry. Febreze. Odor Eater. Renews it. And Glade plugins. So he's obviously trying to mask the smell of the decaying body under the bed. There is a missing persons flyer for Maddie hanging from a bookshelf, and a picture of her older sister Jessie in a leotard doing a gymnastics pose on his headboard.
Hmm.
She's 11.
How, and this kid's about 14?
So yeah.
Yeah, they're all kids. That's crazy.
That's gross.
And it's gross. Yeah, it is gross. I'm just saying it's like...
Oh, yeah. I agree. No. It gets worse. They find a hairbrush and a pair of panties.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They also recover a baseball bat and a knife hidden in the room. They find shoes stained with Maddie's blood, and they notice the ceiling fan with has a fine spray of blood on it.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. So you ask, how did the police not find her sooner? Because remember, they had gone over and interviewed him several times. I don't know if I had mentioned several times, but it's several times. So police had visited the Phillips residence multiple times to search the property and question the family. On the evening of Monday, November 9th, the day before Maddie is discovered under the bed, officers return to the Phillips home once more. They search the home yet again and find nothing. They had cadaver dogs, but the dogs remained outside.
Hmm.
Why?
Because they couldn't think of... They probably just, like, this happens not all
but
the time.
But why have sometimes. The fucking dogs and leave them in the driveway?
They probably assume, like, oh, it couldn't have been a 14-year-old. Like, they just probably assume that, you know?
Assume everybody is a suspect.
Right, yeah, I know that. Well...
I mean... Anyway...
That also leads to another whole other set of issues if you assume everybody's a suspect.
But why have the dogs and leave them? I don't know. It just drives me crazy.
Because hindsight.
But this is why. And this is why this drives me crazy. One officer reported, quote, "The smell in the bedroom was very strong and smelled of decomposition. Yet the cadaver dogs remained outside."
Yeah.
Do you know what decomposition smells like?
Yeah, it's very specific.
It's very specific. Yeah. It's a gross, sweet smell that makes your mouth water for some reason. It's gross.
Yeah, I grew up rural. We'd come across dead animals all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a very distinct smell.
Yeah.
In the house, outside of the house, there was...
Oh, yeah. I remember one time, and this is so gross. So one time when I was a kid, I was probably like... I might have been a teenager, right? And I have a younger sister who I think I'm about 11 years older than her. So she was like pretty young at the time. And our front door was like fucked up, like underneath had like a big hole. And chipmunks used to like come in the house and they would like run around the fucking house and then we'd have to like chase them out, right? Mm-hmm. So my mom, like for some reason, my dad wasn't fixing it. So my mom used to stuff like towels in there. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, it would help. But like every once in a while, one would get in, right? So one day... Like, my sister's room was always, like, a disgusting mess. So, it was just, like, full of, like, clothes and trash and, you know, food waste and, like, whatever. Her room was always a disgusting mess, just like Josh's room. And it stunk, right?
Harsh.
Well, it did. It always smelled, like, really bad. And she was at least old enough to, like, clean her own room. So, she must have been at least 5. And
she's going
to
call in and yell, you know.
Hey, she was 5, okay? My room is probably a fucking gross mess when I was 5. I'm almost 30. My room is a gross mess. Okay. Anyway, so one day, like, we start smelling the smell and we're like, what the hell is that? But like, I'd never smelled something like that before. It just smelled gross. Right. And then days go by and the smell gets worse. And to the point where like, we have to keep our door closed. It smells so bad. And no one like knew what the smell was until one day my mom's in there cleaning and she starts screaming and I'm like, what the fuck? And I come running. And she finds a dead, squished chipmunk under, like, a pile of toys, right? And it smelled so bad. And I shit you not. That room smelled like that for at least 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
The smell does not go away.
Yeah, it takes a while.
And it smells bad. And the smell only finally went away when my mom and my sister moved to a new house and my dad took the house over and we shampooed the carpets and I moved into that room, that's when that smell went away. But before that, it lingered for years. It was disgusting. And it's like a very specific smell. So with that and the officer noting that it smelled like decomposition, why leave the cadaver dogs outside? You're an officer. You know what decomposition smells like. And my story was a chipmunk that weighs, what, a couple ounces?
Yeah.
This is a dead body of a little girl that probably weighed like 50 pounds.
Yeah.
So that's got to be a lot worse. Gotta be, you know, like it's as horrific as that sounds. It's like, come on. And Josh's parents were also questioned about the smell later at trial. And they kept saying the smell was kind of always there. And they just assumed it was from not cleaning. And I made this little note that they've gone nose blind. But I was just like,
I don't buy that. I don't know what's going to happen, but so far,
I kind of don't buy that either. I don't think they knew, but it just seems, you know, obviously very coincidental. And also just, I'm not trying to shame these parents too much, but pay attention to what your fucking kids are doing. Like, how do you not know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, my mom would know.
Yeah.
And if you tried to hide something like that from me, I would fucking know.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
It's pretty obvious, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So anyway, the smell was so potent that when police picked Josh up from school on the day Maddie's body was discovered, they said there was a, quote, smell of decomposition on Josh's clothing. Mm. So he's at school.
Yeah.
Smelling like that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of wonder how, like, teachers wouldn't notice. You know what I mean? Because decomposition is a very specific smell. Like, if you smell it one time, like, I can think about what it's it like smells
a sweet,
like.
Yeah, I know what it smells like. Yeah, it's like a sickening, sweet kind of gross.
Yeah, it's gross. And it's just like, hey, imagine sitting next to him in school.
I don't know. I went to school with some farm kids.
So they all smelled like that?
Some of them, yeah. They just worked on farms and stuff like that.
Hmm. Yeah.
Had a smell to them. Good right. guys, though.
Yeah.
Hardworking.
All right. So again, why hadn't they found her sooner? Jacksonville's Sheriff Nat Glover explains, quote, "The reason we didn't find Maddie was because the way she was encased in the bed. We had consent to search it. We had consent to search, and ordinarily we would not have disassembled furniture with people in the neighborhood being so cooperative. As a result, we did not find the body." Which, that's fine, but they, again, had fucking cadaver dogs. A room smells like decomposition. You're not going to bring a cadaver dog in?
Well, even more so, though. You don't even... If the man himself goes, oh, it smells like decomp, you don't need to get the cadaver dogs. What you should have done is question them and then search the room.
Yeah, I mean...
You already know... The cadaver dogs are going to find the missing body. If you already smell the decomposition, you can pretty much assume there's something decomposing in there. And right. Yeah,
and again,
or at least get the search warrant to search the room, you know? Again, I think that would be enough.
And again, like, I've never smelled a dead body, but I've smelled what a dead chipmunk smells like. I've smelled what a dead mouse in the wall smells like. And that stinks up a fucking room, like, bad.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine what, like, a 50-pound body decaying does? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's got to be worse. So, yeah. I don't know. I just... Some bad police work, maybe. I think this is a little bit of everybody kind of fucking with this one. So
I'm assuming this sounds like it's a pretty upper class neighborhood, too.
I mean, it's Jacksonville, Florida.
If they're offering a $50,000 reward.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure.
I mean, that sounds like it was a pretty upscale kind of place.
It could have been, but I mean, that doesn't really matter either way. It doesn't really have to do with anything, but, well, you know.
Kind of.
Yeah. And I guess, like, you're not going to assume a 14-year-old boy is going to do something like this. So maybe, but at the same time, when you smell decomposition, like, like, you want to maybe check. I don't know. Either way, they ended up finding her the next day. But so we're going to go into what the hell happened. So basically, after Maddie's body is discovered, police go and pick up Josh from school and bring him down to the station for questioning. Pretty quickly, Josh makes a full confession. So this is a part where I say, yet again, trigger warning, because we're going to go into what happened. So Josh claims that on the day of the murder, Maddie came over to his house to play. He tells her he's busy doing chores that were left to him by his parents who were still at work. 22 chores, to be exact.
Hmm.
Yeah, 22 chores.
Hmm.
It's a lot of fucking chores. So his various chores were to walk the dog, clean the bird cages, clean his room, do laundry, water plants, etc. His mother says the chores were supposed to keep him busy and out of trouble between the time he arrived home from school and the time his parents got home from work, so which was a couple hours. So it kind of makes sense, you know. So Josh tells officers that he doesn't do his chores right away that day, but spends the afternoon on the computer. Computer records show that he had, in fact, been on the computer between 4:22 p.m. and 4:22 p.m. and 4:57 p.m. looking at pornography sites, specifically ones that show children and torture.
Hmm. Where the hell did he get that?
I don't know. And at 14, and also, this is 1998. Yeah, it was probably, I've never looked up anything like that, but I'm assuming it was probably a little bit easier to find stuff like that because now they, as far as I know, they usually will take stuff down like that as soon as, you know.
Yeah, I watched the thing about like the dark web and stuff like that. That shit's crazy.
Gross. Yeah.
Dark web. Oh my God.
So gross. There's some gross fucking
people out
there. But
that's where people find that stuff, you know, because I guess it's like untraceable or it's quote untraceable. They get pinched eventually.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Again, it seems like computers are pretty 1998. Like they probably didn't have a lot of the.
That's dial up, baby.
Yeah. It's probably could, like know someone or I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows?
I have no idea how they would. It's crazy.
I don't know. It's gross. So
I don't want to know.
No, I don't want to know either. Please don't tell me where you can find that. Thank you. So Josh claims that at approximately 5:15 p.m., he is outside raking leaves when Maddie shows up and asks him to play baseball with her. She begs him and begs him, and eventually he gives in, saying that he can play for a few minutes, but she needs to leave before his father gets home. They take turns pitching and hitting. Josh says the space they are playing in only allows for about 4 feet between them.
Huh.
So that's like when I put my arms out like this, it's less than that. To hit a baseball. I feel like you could hit somebody with a bat from 4 feet away.
Mm.
Like with the length of your arms plus the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would you do that? Anyway, doesn't make any sense. So Josh claims that because they are so close together, when he goes to hit the ball, he accidentally hits Maddie near her left eye. The little girl starts bleeding from a large gash in her head. She falls down and she starts screaming. Instead of helping Maddie, Josh takes his baseball and glove and puts them in the house.
Hmm.
Just leaves her outside.
Psychopath.
Mm-hmm. So he comes back outside and Maddie is still yelling and crying. He claims that he did not know what to do with her, so he just waits for her to quiet down.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
He's definitely like, I'm not a psychiatrist, but he's definitely a psychopath, I think.
I don't know.
Because they say psychopaths can be like super calm.
Yeah.
In really horrific situations. Like, was this doctor, she had said basically like a sociopath will do something like that and then freak out but goes, okay, well, I have to kill her to shut her up. Where a psychopath can just calmly be like, I'm just going to wait for her to die.
Well, wait and see what happens.
Just calm, collected the entire time.
Either way, they're fucked up.
Yeah, that's so
and they
gnarly.
The yard that they're playing in is across the street from Maddie's house.
It's so weird.
So you couldn't have just walked her over there? Like, kids get hurt all the time. That shit happens, you know? Yeah. I mean, it's an accident. I mean, yeah, he probably would have gotten in trouble, but it's, yeah. Anyway, we'll get into it after. But, okay, so this is where it gets really fucked up. So, again.
Oh, it gets more fucked up.
Trigger warning. Yes. Huge trigger warning. So, he brings her in the house and into his room, first carrying her and then dragging her. Josh says that he panicked, fearing he will be in trouble with his father for playing with the little girl while no one was home. Not for hitting her in the face with a fucking baseball bat.
So is that what killed her?
We'll get to it. So she's still bleeding and crying. So what does he do? He tries to quiet her down by putting his hand over her mouth.
Hmm.
When that doesn't work, he starts beating her in the head with a baseball bat.
Yeah, he's lying. He wasn't trying to, he's trying to kill her.
Hmm. We'll get into that. When, yeah, so he starts beating her with a baseball bat. Maddie continues to whimper and moan. So he takes a knife off of his bookshelf and stabs her twice in the throat. Knowing his father is about to arrive home any minute, Josh panics and opens the side of the bed frame supporting his waterbed and shoves Maddie inside. Covered in blood, Josh runs to the bathroom to clean himself up. While in the bathroom, he can hear Maddie still moaning from under the bed. I believe at this point it's about 5:35 p.m. and Josh's father arrives home and calls out for him. Josh comes out and greets his father, probably so that his father won't go into his room. They discuss dinner. Josh goes back to his room and closes the door.
The fuck?
Mm-hmm. He needs to silence Maddie before his father hears her. So he pulls her out and stabs her 9 more times in the chest.
Jesus.
Only quitting when she stops breathing. He then shoves her back under the bed and there is no more noise from her. So after this horrific account by Josh of Maddie's senseless murder, detectives ask why the little girl was found naked from the waist down. Mm-hmm. Remember she was only wearing socks?
Yeah, I remember she was only wearing socks.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
Josh explains that her shorts and underwear fell off when he dragged her into the bedroom and that her shoes fell off when he had shoved her back under the bed after stabbing her for the second time.
Hmm.
I call bullshit.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah, you lying little piece of shit. So Josh's father tells police that minutes after the conversation he and Josh had about dinner, there was a frantic knock on the door. Sorry, I just hit my microphone.
Good timing, though. It kind of sounded like a knock on the door.
A little bit, yeah. It was Mrs. Clifton, Maddie's mother. Josh's father said he didn't even know who Maddie was. They ask if Josh has seen Maddie, and he tells them he saw her around 5 p.m. that day, but hadn't seen her since. Josh and his father then joined the neighborhood group looking for Maddie. Josh tells police that he slept on the waterbed. Excuse me. He slept on the waterbed all week with Maddie's body underneath it, slowly decaying.
Oh.
Yeah, that's fucking gross, right?
Yeah, that's... Ugh.
He says on Wednesday he could start to smell the body, so he put tape on the opening. Throughout the week, he burns incense and uses various other air fresheners to try and mask the smell. And he just keeps adding more and more tape. So Josh pretty much just continued his life as if nothing had happened. He keeps going to school. He went on a fishing trip with his dad. And his mother says Josh did seem a little off that week, but nothing totally unusual.
Hmm.
So he's just living his life.
That's so crazy.
After he killed a girl and stuffed her under the bed and now she's slowly decaying.
Damn.
He's just sleeping on top of her. Yeah. So people are shocked that Josh Phillips did this. By most people's account, Josh was a pretty normal teenager. He was a 9th grade student at Philip Randolph Academy of Technology. His home life was a little rough growing up. He was scared of his father, and his father was a big man who was 6'6".
Mm-hmm.
It's a big-ass man. Who was also an alcoholic and was known to get violent at times. The family moved around the country quite a lot. Despite this, he was said to be a happy child who was involved in the Cub Scouts, liked museums and zoos, and was interested in science. The family adopted lots of birds, and Josh trained them to whistle songs. As a teen, he was described as a normal kid. He was happy and outgoing. I don't know if you guys can hear that, but someone's lighting off fucking fireworks in our neighborhood. Oh, New Hampshire's fucking weird, man. Don't move here. It's weird. Anyway, so as a teen, he was described as being a normal, happy, outgoing kid. He had many friends, and he was said to be a class clown. And he never showed any signs of violence. He never showed any behavioral problems. He had never even been to the principal's office.
Hmm.
In fact, he is described as a loving and generous kid. So overall, a pretty normal teenager. Maddie's father, Steve Clifton, says he suspected Josh from the start. He said he suspected that Josh had had an obsession with their daughter, Jessie, Maddie's older sister.
Uh-huh.
A month prior to the murder, Josh had been caught snooping around Maddie's sister Jessie's bedroom uninvited.
Hmm.
Remember, they found the panties and the hairbrush in his room along with Jessie's gymnastic picture. She's 11.
Hmm.
It's fucking gross. So after that, he was forbidden to enter their home. And he had also been in trouble for talking about sex in front of the two little girls. The girl's parents forbid them from playing with Josh, but this restriction was later lifted. There had also been evidence that their home had been broken into on many occasions while the family had been away. The windows had been damaged. There was a large hole in the back wall of Maddie's closet, along with other holes behind picture frames and posters, as if the girls were being spied on. That's gross.
That's so weird.
These things had been reported to the police, but nothing ultimately came of it. Turns out Josh isn't the little angel everyone says he is.
Mm-mm.
Of course, sometime later, Josh was asked why he killed his little friend. And he said, quote, "I don't know. I don't think I have the answer. Maybe I should get some kind of counseling or something to find out what's wrong with me." Yeah, maybe you fucking should, you sick fuck.
That sounds like such a stock answer that like a
complete... I could just picture him saying it so monotone too. Like, "I don't know. I don't think I have the answer. Maybe I need some kind of counseling."
Yeah.
Like, that's okay, like, you fucking psycho.
That's like stock psycho answer. I don't know.
Yeah.
So did they try him as an adult or?
Oh, you'll hear, because we're going to get into the hearing now. So the first hearing, Josh's parents refuse a public defender and instead hire Richard Nichols for $60,000 to give their son the best defense. Which, news flash, nothing's saving them.
No.
No, just get the public defender. Save your fucking money.
Yeah.
Because they can't really afford this.
Mm-hmm.
They took out a second mortgage and sold some of their possessions and maxed out all their credit cards to get this lawyer. Nichols, the lawyer, refuses to use Josh's self-incriminating statement to police as a confession. He says that the teenager was coerced into giving the statement as he was not given the opportunity to speak to a lawyer first.
Mm-hmm.
Nichols plans to use the insanity plea. Dumb. Okay, they found a body under his bed. He confessed to everything. And even though I don't think it was like 100% the real story, he fucking did it.
Of course, yeah, he definitely did it. But, you know, one thing I learned from West Memphis 3, though. If I was a cop and I found a body in a young kid's bedroom and they just had this, yep, it was me, I did it. I would think about the possibility, did the father coerce this? Did an adult, I would take that into consideration.
I don't think they're thinking that.
I know that, but I'm just saying, like, remember West Memphis 3, how it was like, it is clear as day, they did it, this kid confessed, blah, 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 and it was something else.
Yeah, but that, you can't even compare. That was a completely different story. Like, they had, remember they kept, I forget what his name was, the kid that had the lower IQ, they kept him.
Jesse?
Yeah, his name was Jesse, and they kept him in the interrogation room for like 10 fucking hours without his parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then they only had like 30 minutes of fucking recordings.
Yes, you're
remember?
Right.
Remember? Yeah. And then his parents were not thing, present. Yeah. His parents didn't give permission for the police to talk to him. And then they still were somehow able to use that in court because the judge was wicked fucking biased. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's a whole new thing. That's
right,
a whole different thing.
No, you're right. You're right.
That's a whole different
thing. I'm just saying, like, a lot of times your cases have these twists and turns. So I was like, maybe something. I'm not saying that he didn't do it, but was he coerced?
You'll see what happens. So Joshua Phillips is tried as an adult on Monday, November 16th, 1998. State Attorney Harry L. Shorstein announces that the state plans on trying 14-year-old Joshua Phillips as an adult for the murder of Maddie Clifton. They seek to have the boy charged with first-degree murder. Shorstein says, quote, "The murder of this little girl has shaken me, just as it has the rest of the community. Appropriate resources within my office will be devoted to making sure that Maddie Clifton's murder is brought to justice." End quote. If Josh is convicted as an adult, he could face life in prison without the possibility of parole. If convicted as a juvenile, he will be released after he turns 19.
Hmm.
So that's why they want to try him as an adult try to get him convicted as an adult because he's obviously a fucking crazy person. Because even before he killed anybody, he was looking at fucked up shit on the internet. So he's fucked up. Okay.
He was a time bomb.
He was a time bomb. Like, this was something like this was going to happen sooner or later to somebody, whether it was a child or an adult. or I mean, I think it would have been a child because he obviously likes child pornography. Ugh, that's so gross. But imagine if he was convicted as a juvenile and he gets released. He's 14. So yeah. 19, he is only, that's only 5 years. And then he'd be released. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's disgusting. So Thursday, November 19th, 1998, Joshua Phillips is indicted for the murder of Maddie Clifton in the first degree. Florida utilizes the death penalty for first degree murder charges. Due to Josh only being 14 at the time, he escapes this sentence. So March 22nd, 1999, the trial is moved from Jacksonville to Polk County, Florida, nearly 200 miles away, due to the growing publicity of the case. And they wanted to give Josh a fair trial, which this motherfucker doesn't deserve a fair anything. So at the trial, in 1999, Josh Phillips goes on trial for the murder of Maddie Clifton. Josh's attorney, Richard Nichols, in an opening statement, argues that Josh's actions were the product of panic, not plan. Nichols said Maddie's murder was, quote, an act that began as an accident and deteriorated through panic that bordered on madness. So you're saying if you accidentally hit somebody, most people will panic and just kill them.
Yeah. No.
That's what you're saying. That's what this family paid $60,000 for, a man to fucking say that. Jesus. Yeah. He reminds the jury that Josh does not have a history of violence and no reason to harm Maddie. After hearing testimony from both detectives on the case and the medical examiner, attorney Richard Nichols, along with Josh's parents, decide not to put on a defense. They call no witnesses. Josh will not be taking the stand. And they also decide not to go forth with the insanity plea. Nichols is relying heavily on his closing statement. After hearing both the defendant and the prosecution's closing statements, the jury deliberates for no more than 2 hours before finding now 15-year-old Joshua Phillips guilty of first-degree murder. So his closing statement, I didn't put it in here because the book that I read for this included his whole Mr. Nichols or whatever the hell his name is. It included this guy's closing statement, and it was like 25 fucking pages long. It was so long and it was so dumb. Mm. Like this family like ruined their lives. Like they paid so much money for this guy. And he sucked. I'm sorry. But like the book that I read, I will cite it at the end, but it's a pretty quick read. But even if you just want to get the excerpt of his closing statement, it's almost like he knew they had no chance. You know what I mean? Like they had no chance.
Almost like he was like filibustering kind of ranting on and on and on.
I mean, it was like a well-written statement, but it didn't have a lot of like, I felt like there wasn't a lot of hope behind it. Like, they had already given up, basically. They called no witnesses. Josh did not take the stand. They decided not to go forward with the insanity plea. They fucking gave up. He was just relying on a closing statement.
Yeah.
In that. So, yeah. In August 20th, 1999, Josh Phillips is sentenced to life in prison after being tried as an adult. In 2002, Josh Phillips appealed his sentence, but the court finds that his sentence is appropriate for his crime, despite him being a juvenile at the time. Hmm. In 2017, he was resentenced to life in prison. So that's it. That was the murder of Maddie Clifton.
Jesus.
What did you think?
That's just awful.
It was sick, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that Josh is someone's cute little prison wife right now.
Yeah, seriously.
Sometimes I'm glad when people like that don't get the death penalty because it's like they're going to have their entire life.
Yeah, because he's so young too.
Yeah.
Like you're in prison. You don't get to look at any fucking child pornography, you sick shit, for the rest of your life.
And those guys do not get treated well.
No. And you know what too? I mean, I know there's like kids who fuck up and they do stuff. But when it comes to kids that like he pretty much killed her slowly. You know what I mean? Like he beat her, and first of all he tried to smother her with his hands, and then he beat her, and then he fucking stabbed her not once but two separate times,
yeah,
and then shoved her under a bed.
Yeah,
like that's just horrific. Yeah, kids, I don't care how old you are.
Kids
when you
grow
do that.
Up, you know.
Kids
but you
grow up, yeah.
Breaking like the neighbor's
I was,
window.
In the eighth grade,
you know?
I bought fucking Adderall off a kid and I got suspended from school for 2 weeks. That was a fuck up. I didn't kill anybody.
I'm not going to go into anything I did when I was younger because I know my mother listens to this podcast. So I was an angel when I was a boy. I did nothing wrong.
No.
Other than the Penthouse magazine. That was the one thing.
That was your one thing.
That was my one thing. I did nothing wrong. Mm-hmm.
Well, you certainly didn't kill anybody, so.
That you know of. No, I didn't kill anybody.
No, no, I could never see you. No. You don't even like to kill spiders. Like, when I freak out about a spider.
No, I killed a squirrel with a pellet gun when I was a kid. I felt horrible.
Oh, my God.
I felt so bad.
One time, my ex, when we had our old apartment, we had a balcony. We were on the third floor. And he had this fucking slingshot that he bought from the flea market. And we had those, you know, those, like, reusable ice cubes that you can get?
They're reusable
ice cubes, so they're like plastic and they have water in them and you put them in the freezer and they freeze and then you just wash them. So we had those and we were living with my older brother at the time and he was fucking firing these ice cubes out of the window or out of like off the porch and he fucking hit a squirrel with one.
Yeah.
And we were both like, oh my God. Like we were like freaking out. We're like, oh my God, the squirrel. I don't think it died, but like still it was just like, oh no, the squirrel. And I'm like, that was like 10 years ago and I'm still thinking just about it. You know what I mean? I'm like sad about it. Like if I run over like a turtle in the road, I like want to fucking kill myself. Like it,
I know.
It sucks, you know, but yeah, much less like killing another person. That's horrific.
Yeah, so, I can't even like imagine.
No, me neither. Especially not at 14 years old. Like I said, I was like too busy like thinking about boys and drawing on my pants and doing other stupid shit, writing poetry. So my one and only source for this case really was a book called Kids Who Kill Joshua Phillips by Catherine McMaster. It's actually a pretty good book. It's not too long. It had a ton of details. I think it had like maybe a little bit of interviewing with maybe some of the officers or whatever, but it was pretty good. I definitely recommend it. I think it's free on the Kindle store if y'all do that. So, yeah, that was the murder of Maddie Clifton, everybody. That one was a little bit of a rough one. I have a really fun, spooky one for next week as kind of a palate cleanser for this week because this one was really...
This one was heavy.
It was heavy. And like I said, these ones are going to be kind of fewer and farther between, but they'll be followed up with more. The one I'm doing next week is... It's really spooky. I had heard this again on another podcast like a long time ago. And while they had posted the pictures on the Instagram and what I like to kind of look at the pictures while people are talking about stuff sometimes. And I remember not being able to look at the pictures because I was so freaked out. So this is a really good one, but it's, you know, it's a fun one, but it's definitely a good palate cleanser for this week because this week was pretty rough.
This one was heavy. Yeah,
it was heavy.
And for people just joining in, the whole thing of the show is I have no idea what, when we sit down to record this podcast, I don't know, I have any idea of what I'm going to hear. Monica does all the research. She sits down and goes, Nick, you ready? And I go, yeah, I'm ready. And then she just spews a bunch of information at me. And I'm basically a podcast laugh track. So I go, ooh, and then people react.
And sometimes you're not listening to what I'm saying, so you get like the story all wrong, and then I have to backtrack and do it again.
And it makes it fun. But this case definitely ruined my day.
Yeah, and or your night, I guess.
Yes.
So now we're going to go to the bar.
We're going to go to the bar.
We have Sundays and Mondays off. Barber life. So we're going to go to the bar. We're going to have a few drinks with our favorite Irish bartender. So in the meantime, if you guys want, you can follow us on social media. Instagram at creepyourheartout_pod, Twitter at creepyho_pod, yes, creepyho_pod. If there are any cases that you want to send us, or if you would like your own personal stories read on the podcast, you can email us at creepyourheartout@gmail.com. Oh, I'm sorry, it's creepyourheartoutpod@gmail.com. Don't email creepyourheartout@gmail.com because I don't know who that is. It will never get to me.
And it's probably someone creepy.
It's probably someone creepy. And lastly, if you are listening to us on Apple Podcasts or any other streaming services that lets you leave a review, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review. This helps spread awareness of the podcast and lets the internet gods know that we were doing a good job. If you leave us a nice comment, we may even read it on the podcast. So we will see you all next Monday for our palate cleanser spooky episode. So make sure you tune in. Bye, creepies.
Creep you later.